You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator. What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
This episode of Writing Excuses is brought to you by Audible. Visit audiblepodcast.com/excuse to start your free trial membership.
Season 11, Episode 3.
This is Writing Excuses, Layering Genres.
15 minutes long.
Because you're in a hurry.
And we're not that smart.
I'm Brandon.
I'm Mary.
I'm Howard.
I'm Dan.
And we are continuing on theme this month, introducing to you the idea of elemental genres. The primary reason we want to teach you to start looking at elemental genre is so that you will be aware of how to take genres and ideas and emotions from different stories that you experience and inject them into your own stories. And oftentimes you'll do this as the subplot or the sort of sub-story of a side plot or whatnot.
Character arc
and all of these things. And we want to talk today just about the general idea of how to accomplish this and make it work for you.
Yeah, in the book I'm writing right now, as an example, it's the second Mirador book that is a heist story combined with a sports movie story. So in our terms, I guess that would be an ensemble story and a some other kind of story. Two different ensemble stories.
Yeah, no, you're doing
together.
Two different ensemble types. It's really like an ensemble, probably ensemble thriller, and an ensemble like relationship group or overcoming issue.
The heist is much more of a thriller. Anyway, the point that we're trying to make is that you can use this to add a lot more kind of richness and texture to it.
And this is something that I started doing as a writer without realizing it, and I think it's become a major strength of my writing. People come to me and they say, you write so many different things, and they're all so distinctive. I get that a lot. How can you write so many fantasy books where they're all so distinctive? And they think it's the magic systems.
Yeah.
To an extent, it kind of is, but it's really not. The tone is what's getting them.
Yeah, and that was something that I deliberately decided to do with the Glamorous Histories books, is the first one is pretty much a straight-up romance. It's, you know, Jane Austen with magic. So it's romance with a wonder subplot. A relationship with a wonder. And then with each of them, I switched up what one of my layers was. So I would say, you know, my second book is a spy novel disguised as a Regency romance. The fourth book is a heist novel disguised as a Regency romance. So all of them have this, I'm using this other structure to kind of guide everything. And actually, as we get deeper into the series, that heist structure in Valor and Vanity is actually the major structure. The romance structure is my subplot.
Subplot.
Now, I do like how in each of those books, the romance remains as a theme throughout the whole of it. And if you look at the packaging, your publisher is not packaging any of them as different genres. In order to maintain continuity and not confuse the reader, they all look like they are Regency romances, with people on the cover that probably aren't actually even Jane or Vincent most of the time.
Yeah.
Just people in pretty Regency clothing.
Yes, yes. The woman on the cover of book two is the woman who sells my book.
Yes.
The, you know, one of the problems people have with sequels all the time is that they have to be the same thing we loved in the first one, but they also have to be super different. And layering genres like this is a fantastic way of achieving that very simply.
And this also, this trick also works with short fiction in addition to long fiction. So the idea of, you know, if you want to write more than one story in a world, switching up your subgenre is going to be a useful tool for you.
You know, a couple of years ago, as I was working on the second Runewrite piece for Space Eldritch, you know, I said, you know, I need to write this horror piece, and so I've got to find ways to make this character helpless. And Mary said, no, you need to make her super competent, but her competence doesn't matter. Her competence is not how this works, because that's how horror works.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that, while hugely simple, is also hugely effective because it's hugely simple. If you want to layer horror as a subgenre, as an elemental genre in the thing you are doing, let's say as part of a character arc, you can take that character and you can make them super competent, and for their piece of the story, the thing that they are best at doesn't help, and they move from disaster to disaster where they can't accomplish things and where things get worse, even while the main story can be doing something else. And so in practice, I look at this and it feels very obvious to me that once you have a toolbox for making a certain elemental genre work for you, making it work as a subplot, making it work as a character arc it's almost cookbook.
Yeah, and basically what Howard's saying is that you can actually apply these subgenres to each character's arc.
Yes.
Which is so that each character is experiencing their own story. And then when you are, especially if you're working with something with multiple points of view, you can give the readers a different sense each chapter that they go into. While your overarching genre is maintaining consistency of tone so that it feels coherent and as if they're in one solid book.
And I think that is one of the best ways to use this. In fact, during the Writing Excuses cruise last year, I frequently got the questions of how do I make sure that my side characters or that my subplots feel distinctive? It feels like they're all blending together. Well, if each of them is a different elemental genre, your reader is very naturally going to be able to distinguish, oh yes, this is the person who is in a story where they were highly competent and forced to not be able to use their competence. This is the story where the person who doesn't know anything about the magic, while everyone else does, is experience it for the first time, just like the reader is, and introducing it to the reader. And those different tones are great.
Mm-hmm. I mean, in a lot of ways, you can say that we talk about everybody as the hero of their own story. Mm-hmm. The villain is experiencing a horror genre subplot,
yes,
while everybody else is experiencing,
yeah,
you know, an ensemble or a heist.
I am so capable. Why everything I do falling apart?
Oh, yes. It's because my trusted lieutenant has betrayed me. Meanwhile, the trusted lieutenant is having a romantic subplot,
right,
in which.
Let's go ahead and stop for our book of the week, which is actually a very cool book called Word Puppets.
That's right. I have a short story collection, Word Puppets, and it's narrated by Kate Baker, who is one of my favorite narrators. She's the voice of Clark's World. Word Puppets is roughly, not completely, roughly based in chronological order, so you can see my progression as a writer. And that's one of the reasons.
Way to do it.
That's one of the reasons we did it. Also, it means that we don't have the first and weakest story at the end.
Yes.
But but the other thing is that it contains a one brand new story, and that is set in the same universe as Lady Astronaut of Mars. So there's actually three stories in the Lady Astronaut of Mars universe, and this is a really good example for you guys when you listen to these, because The first one of those is the subgenre is horror. The second one, the subgenre is very much kind of relationship. And the third one, the subgenre is the third one, the driving piece is relationship, and the subgenre is kind of I'm forgetting our own proprietary terms.
The elemental genre of
It's wonder, the exploration.
Idea.
It's the third one is idea. So they each have a very different feel while being in the same universe.
You know, I love Lady Astronaut of Mars, specifically because of that retrofuturism that I don't think enough people are telling stories about. They're very fun. It's an awesome story. Your short stories are all awesome.
Well, thank
you. I would hope most of the stories in this piece, but hopefully not all of them because you have a new one.
Yes.
So if you guys want to listen. Ooh. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, and I forgot. Patrick Rothfuss does the introduction.
Excellent.
Maybe.
If you want to get a copy of Word Puppets, narrated by Kate Baker, written by Mary Robinette Cole, go to audiblepodcast.com/excuse, start a 30-day free trial, support the podcast, and get a free book. All right, let's keep talking about genre as subplot, because I often, as we're moving forward, we're going to be talking about blending these, and it's even for your main plot, like you were talking about here. And it's going to become a mix and match for things for you readers. For instance, it may not be related directly to character, but Dan's story is a heist mixed with relationship or heist mixed with thriller. And heist is our ensemble elemental genre. The idea being that your books don't have to have a major genre and a subgenre. Your major genre can be just a mashup of two of these together. And you can start to see that, you know, we've identified 11 of these. You may come up with more yourself as you're listening.
Absolutely.
That 11 factorial is a lot of different options for creating genres. And this is, again, what we've noticed that the Marvel movies are often doing, is that they are, you know, having this sort of, they've created their elemental subgenre of superhero. It has origin story, and it has all of this stuff, and they mash it up with another main genre, and that's your film.
Yeah, and then the other thing that they're doing is something we've talked about before, is that they have used the design elements of superhero film to convince you that you're watching a superhero film even while they're doing other things. That is the joy of being able to play with these elements, is that you can...
Yes.
You know, it's like if you are in love with one style of thing, you can totally play with it in another world.
So let me ask you, how should people go about doing this? Like, they're saying, okay, Brandon, I get this idea. Well, how do I use it?
So what Mary just talked about with the design elements of the superhero genre, I think it's those design elements, like the set dressing almost, that initially attracts a lot of us to a particular thing. I want to tell fantasy because I love dragons, because I love magic. And so you take those design elements and then think, well, okay, what kind of story am I going to tell about dragons and magic? And then you can take a look at these elemental genres and see what will fit in there.
I think that I like the word elemental because it strips away the combinations of things and it forces us to look all the way at the underpinnings. When you say, you know, I like dragons and I like magic, the first question I would ask is, how do dragons and magic make me feel? What is it about that makes me love this? Because if I am trying to elicit the feeling that I get from reading a dragons and magic book, by writing my own dragons and magic book, I may end up disappointed because I have not identified what it is that makes me feel the way I liked feeling when I read that.
Dan, what was that story from the cruise where there was a student who wanted to have a book that had the wall in it?
That was Mary.
Yeah. So we had a student, and he said that he had trouble coming up with something that he felt was original. And I asked him what were the things that he got excited about when he was reading, and he loved the idea of a wall. And
right, like in George R. R. Martin.
In George R. R. Martin, he specifically cited the wall in George R. R. Martin, and I said, okay, well, why is the wall interesting to you? What is it that is exciting? And what it was the idea of there being a barrier, and beyond which there was just this great unknown. and the great unknown, that sense of danger and possibility of exploration and curiosity, and all of that was actually what excited him.
Mm-hmm.
The wall itself was less exciting. So what we then started to do in the brainstorming was focus on ways to create a space where there was an unknown territory and things that were not walls that would be act as a barrier.
Right.
And so this is what Howard is talking about when you're looking and trying to come up with an original idea, really drilling down into that feeling that it gives you and how you can, we've used this term before, how you can hack your brain or hack your reader's brain to produce that same feeling in a different way. He wound up brainstorming a whole bunch of different ideas. I won't tell you the one he wound up with. But
I'll tell you the one I came up with.
Yeah.
Because you were telling this story at the cruise, and I thought, I love walls. I love that scary thing is out there, and we have civilization inside and not outside. And that was interesting to me.
Uh-huh.
Civilization inside and beyond that is, you know, danger. It's the Great Wall of China, right?
Yeah.
Beyond this are barbarians. And so I thought, well, let's just invert the wall, and it's a giant trench.
Oh,
and there
yeah.
are dark things in the trench that come out, and we have to keep them in there.
Oh, yeah.
And that was a story. I'm like, I'm going to write that story someday. I'm going to write the wall that is a big hole in the ground.
And so yeah. for me, the very literal sort of interpretation of that, you know, we were in this giant floating city of comfort and unlimited food.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a couple of times when, you know, at night I would walk to the rail and I would look out over this vast expanse of darkness. And I had been told, you know, this is the depth here. This is the distance to these other places. And so sure, we kind of have a map of this. But from where I am sitting,
mm-hmm.
I am literally 6 inches and one really bad decision from
never
death,
being seen
from
again.
Never being seen yeah. again. Yeah. It's then when we would pull into port, the realization that, okay, I have my city here, and we will venture outside of this city and go collect whatever and then hurry back before we... So as you were talking about the wall, that sense of there's stuff outside, let's go explore, but then hurry back before it gets dark, that was our ship.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I never really got off of.
you explored the darkness.
Certainly not
once.
After that realization.
And it's funny because the idea that I came up with was darkness.
Mm.
You know, that there was just this spot of complete darkness.
Right.
Like no light penetrated. And the thing that I want you guys to notice is that we've all come up with very, very different ideas from the central elemental
yep.
thing of exploration and
mixed
fear.
Mixed with horror. It's exploration
horror.
And horror together.
Yeah.
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is, you know, exploration and horror. This is how you can play with these subgenres. And so calling this subgenre is not quite
right.
the right term, but
yeah.
play with this layering effect to get something that is new and fun. I mean, I layering romance and,
yes.
you know, relationship and horror.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, that's going to be an
well,
interesting and
layering comedy and horror has made some really great films
oh,
over
that's
the
true.
Last years.
Oh,
yeah.
my, yes.
And so you can see just I am so excited about this idea and presenting it to you. Even talking about it for just a few minutes drives us all into creating new stories. We're hoping it will do the same for you and kind of just keep you creating stories, keep you excited about your writing, and hopefully make the writing that you do a little bit better. We're going to leave you with some homework, and Mary's got the homework for us, and it relates to the homework we gave you last time.
All right, so last time we asked you to identify the major driving emotion of the story that you were interested in working on. What I want you to do now is I want you to think of a contrasting emotion. So essentially what you're doing is you're creating a foil plot, a
mm-hmm.
foil emotion for your primary emotion, because this is going to allow you to showcase every, you know, the or do a contrast between the darkness of one and the happy emotions of the other.
Right.
So think about not the design elements, but think about the emotional elements and think about, you don't have to worry about our proprietary vocabulary yet. I just want you to identify the emotion that you want to elicit in yourself if you were hacking your brain.
Now, by this point, we will have all 11 of the ideas we've come up with put on our website, and we will post them each We'll put them in a place that they're easy to find each week if you want to come glance them over them again. As you can tell from this episode, we're still getting used to this terminology ourselves. hopefully, across the course of the year, we'll all start really using the same terminology.
I'm going to put a stake in the ground and say that by the end of the season, we will have altered some of the terminology and changed the list.
Yes.
Because it just makes more sense.
Yep.
And you guys will probably be better versed in it than we will because we just talked about it once.
All right. Well, this has been Writing Excuses. You're out of excuses. Now go write.